Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. John Pelletieri from the Department of Justice on behalf of the United States. Section 48, which makes it unlawful to create or distribute animal crush videos, is constitutional on its face. There are two tests for facial validity under the First Amendment. The first test asks whether the statute is unconstitutional in all or virtually all of its applications. The second test is overbreath. Under the overbreath doctrine, if a statute has constitutional and unconstitutional applications, if the unconstitutional applications are substantial, both
in... I don't think the defendants raised overbreath.
I don't think they did affirmatively raise it, and it's not clear what the district court's analysis was, whether it was under the first standard, which is whether there's a plainly legitimate sweep, or overbreath. The government's position is that the statute is valid under either standard. So to the extent that there's a lack of clarity in the district court's analysis, it's valid in both contexts. Section 48 is valid because it's a very narrow statute. There are categories of speech that the government can prescribe without running afoul of the First Amendment and without triggering strict scrutiny.
You know, if obscenity is defined the way it's defined elsewhere, then why do you need this statute? Because you can just go under general obscenity law.
Well, this statute is not entirely contiguous with the other obscenity statutes. There's conduct that this statute reaches that the other obscenity statutes don't reach. So, for example, creating an animal crush video with reason to know that it will be distributed is unlawful under the statute. That wouldn't be unlawful under the other obscenity statutes. Creating an animal crush video that is later distributed without regard to mental intent is unlawful under this statute. And also marketing, advertising, and exchanging animal crush videos are unlawful under the statute, and it's not clear that that type of conduct would be covered by the federal obscenity statutes. But in any event, the Congress oftentimes, and it's perfectly legitimate for Congress to make the same conduct unlawful under different statutes. And so long as there's no conflict between the laws, both laws have to be given their full effect under the language of the statute. And this statute uses the term obscene, and that's a legal term of art. In order to be covered under the statute's prohibitions, the depiction of an actual live animal being physically abused has to be obscene. And that's a legal term of art. It has an established definition, and by using that term in the statute...
What the district court's... I mean, what you've got here is Congress is trying to redo what they did wrong the first time, right?
Yes.
And so what they've done is they've tailored it differently.
Yes.
But it seems to me what the district court said was they sort of tailored it wrong both ways. To the extent that you want to defend this under Ferber, they've cut out that has to be an unlawful act underneath. To the extent that you want to rely on Miller, they've expanded obscenity. That's the district court's basically its ruling. Stevens and Brown still invalidate this. So when I read your brief, I was looking, where are you saying that the district court erred? Did it principally err because this fits under obscenity, it's impliedly reaching sexual conduct, or are you saying this is unprotected entirely because it's criminal conduct? Or are you saying this is Chaplinsky balancing? It's content-based, but you meet that. Which of the three is your primary argument to us?
The primary argument is the obscenity argument. The court doesn't have to get into the Ferber argument if the court concludes that the statute...
And the Ferber argument's a lot weaker by virtue of them having deleted the requirement that it be criminally unlawful in the state. Would you agree with that?
It's somewhat weaker, but it's by no means fatal to our argument. The federal child pornography statute has no requirement.
But if it's weaker and it wasn't strong enough in Stevens, that would make us have very little latitude after the Supreme Court's analysis.
Well Stevens did not apply the Ferber analysis to animal crush videos. Only Justice Alito's dissent did.
But the government argued it.
The government argued in our brief that the government argued that there was that the court should recognize a new category of unprotected speech. And analogizing to Ferber. We're not arguing that there's a new category of unprotected speech. We're arguing in this case that there's an established Ferber speech integral to criminal conduct category, and this speech falls under that established category. We're not arguing for a new category. But to get back to the obscenity point, the error of the district court was an error of statutory interpretation principally. There are a number of principles that compel the conclusion that obscene as used in the statute means obscene as defined by the Supreme Court in Miller. And Miller defines, for several years, for a number of years, the Supreme Court struggled to define obscenity, and then eventually it settled on a definition in Miller.
But the Supreme Court's repeatedly said you can't just tag on the word obscenity and then constitutionally protect anything. Essentially, that was in the Reno case.
Well, and the Supreme Court has held that if Congress uses the term obscene, it incorporates all of its meaning under Miller, so therefore it only reaches unprotected speech that qualifies as obscenity under the Miller standard. So it has to be material that, taken right. as a whole, appeals to the prurient interest.
But you'd agree here that as to the second element, it wasn't clear in the congressional history, and it hasn't been clear in the statute, that it necessarily incorporates the full second element.
No, I wouldn't agree with that.
Ultimate acts. There's nothing in there about graphic sex, ultimate acts.
There's the legislative history states that explains the witnesses agree that crush videos could be constitutionally prohibited in line with the obscenity doctrine formulated by the Supreme Court in Miller v. California. Miller and its progeny firmly established the term obscene as a legal term of art. This is all in the House committee report.
So last quick question on this, right? Your view would be, let's assume, and I assume you've seen the four videos.
Yes, I have.
Okay, well, there isn't that much sexual conduct. There's a little bit of nudity, buttocks, to my memory. Then there's a great deal of horrific cruelty and violence, physical violence. But would any defendant charged under Section 48 be able to make an as-applied attack, or would just go to the jury like true threats? Jury would be told, you've got to find that this is sexual conduct.
The government bears the burden of proving beyond a reasonable doubt that the material that the defendants distribute and create, taken as a whole, appeals to the prurient interest in sex, depicts sexual conduct it goes to the jury, and if there's insufficient evidence, there's a Rule 29 argument, there's acquittal by the jury. We disagree that there's not a lot of sexual conduct in these videos.
Well, let's follow up on Judge Higginson's question. Seems to me if obscenity includes sadomasochism or masochistic or bestiality, and you've got a scantily clad and aroused woman performing what amounts to anal sex with a tool on an animal, why isn't that per se obscenity?
We believe absolutely that we would be able to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that meets all three requirements of the Miller obscenity standard. We believe it appeals to the prurient interest in sex, which means that it appeals to an abnormal or unhealthy interest in sex. We believe that in the video depicts sexual conduct in a patently offensive manner beyond the norms that society deems acceptable in depicting sexual conduct, and we believe that there's no socially redeeming value. Now, sexual conduct, as used in Miller, it's not a term of art. It's not an established term. It has to be understood in its normal usage and context. Now, we understand it's not a statutory term, but it is useful to go to the dictionary to try to understand what sexual conduct encompasses. Conduct is...
Instead of an animal had been a minor, and she had done that to a minor, there's no question that would have been obscene, sexual, sadomasochistic. Is that not
We don't believe that the district court or the defendants would try to make the case that that wasn't sexual conduct. But we believe that it's sexual conduct regardless of whether it's a human being or an animal under the general usage of the term sexual conduct.
But does the content of these videos matter to this particular challenge, because it's a facial challenge? So if we were to import the definition from Miller into this statute, are we done?
Yes.
And then you go back to the district court and argue about these particular videos?
The content of these videos, Congress intended to incorporate the Miller obscenity standard, and Congress was of the opinion that the typical animal crush video would qualify as obscene under the Miller standard. Now, the district court and the defendants disagree with the Congress's opinion, but regardless of that disagreement, the statute is facially valid because
it incorporates... So are we done at that point? If we say, all right, Miller is the test, Miller is what this word obscene means, it's not therefore facially invalid... reverse and remand, and then you have the argument that Judge Wiener was inquiring about, do these videos depict sexual conduct? But is that even before us, these videos, if we're talking about a facial challenge?
No, it's not before the court. Now, the court, the reason the government lodged the videos with the court is because oftentimes the Supreme Court has looked at material to, when determining facial challenges, overbreath and things of that sort. So it is relevant just to as a general matter for the court to be aware of it, but it is not relevant as a statutory textual matter to determine the facial validity of the statute. You're right, Your Honor. The court could stop right there, and that would end the case.
Now, do we need to define sexual conduct in this case, or do we send you back to the district court to examine the question of whether this woman, scantily clad, blah, 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 is sexual conduct, or is it that's something that we need to do at this point?
You don't need to. We think it would be appropriate for the court if it to make clear, as the government views is the case, in order to give guidance, that sexual conduct does incorporate, does include the types of material that are generally appear in these crush videos and in these videos in this case. To go back, yes, you're right, Your Honor, you don't have to. It's not required to reverse the district court. But to go back to the idea of what sexual conduct encompasses, the definition of conduct is personal behavior by action or inaction, or the manner in which a person behaves. And then sexual, from Webster's third, is of or relating to the sphere of behavior associated with libidinal gratification. So I think if you combine those two, a reasonable interpretation of sexual conduct is behavior related to or associated with sexual gratification, or behavior aimed at or arousing or gratifying.
What Supreme Court case applying Miller is the most expansive that would extend to this type of analysis of non-sexual sexual conduct?
Ward v. Illinois, which applies Michigan, and Miller itself. Miller itself lists excretory functions.
I mean, I think the oddity, and again, I assume you read virtually all the briefs in the Stevens case, which is very close to this. So the con law amicus brief, professor's brief there, said this isn't anywhere near Miller. Your argument to us today sounds like you'd be saying if Congress had just added on obscenity to the original Section 48, it would have survived constitutional analysis. In other words, none of the rest of the narrowing down to wounding and maiming instead of just killing matters. As long as you put that word obscenity in, it survives.
Yes, if Congress had required that in order to fall under the initial statute that the material be obscene, that would have saved the statute. But we don't agree that this is like the Stevens case. The Stevens statute was much broader.
Well, it's broader, but you're saying that word obscene is sort of the magic wand.
Yes.
But the irony is, Congress's intent here is to protect the animals. This is so this will be a very under-inclusive criminal statute. Would you agree? In other words, you'll have a horrific set of crush videos that there may be no sexual overlay at all, and those would get a free pass.
Well, if someone were to just cruelly commit animal abuse for no reason associated with any sexual conduct, you're right. But this is Congress has policy reasons to deal with different types of
but
conduct.
But that runs into RAV a little bit. They're saying this particular viewpoint on killing animals, we're going to prescribe. But in all other respects, torture, cutting them apart, chopping them up, that's protected by the First Amendment?
We disagree that it's a viewpoint. The RAV holds that the government can't suppress views and ideas by singling out subclasses of constitutionally unprotected speech.
But this is a subclass of people that delight in dismembering animals.
Absolutely, Your Honor. But the idea of RAV and the holding of RAV is that it's oftentimes perfectly appropriate to differentiate between subclasses of, for example, obscenity, as long as there's no danger that the suppression of ideas is afoot. And this statute does not suppress ideas. And the court in RIV gave a number of examples and a catch-all for when a differentiation between unprotected speech is perfectly appropriate. The court, for example, mentioned obscenity, a law that would allow any obscene movies except those depicting blue-eyed actresses. That's a content differentiation that discriminates on the basis of content, but there's no suppression of ideas afoot here. And the same
one question, because your time's running. What's the status of the state criminal cases against Richards and Justice?
Ms. Richards pleaded guilty.
She pled guilty.
Yes, and to three counts, I believe. And Mr. Justice has raised some sort of competency issue, so that's on hold at the present. But to get back to RAV, there's no danger that the suppression of ideas is afoot in this case. Animal crush videos do not do not advance any ideas or viewpoints. They depict the actual abuse of an actual live animal.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court. Mr. Justice's counsel, Mr. Gallagher, and I have split the oral argument this morning. I'll be handling the Miller issue as well as any overbreath challenges that may have been raised in the lower court. And he'll be handling the RAV issue and the speech integral to criminal conduct.
When you say may have been raised, is it your position that in district court or in your briefs you've ever raised overbreath?
I don't think we directly raised overbreath in the district court. The district court squarely ruled upon that in its decision, but we didn't directly raise that issue.
And I didn't see it in the brief either.
Okay, well, then that was an easy part of what you said. Now let's ask about Miller. I'll ask you the same question I asked your opponent, which is, if we say, yes, the word obscene in this statute is meant to encompass Miller, are we done?
No.
Your facial unconstitutionality is finished.
I don't think that we're done because we have always the RAV issue. There is, and which Mr. Gallagher is handling.
You're saying incorporating Miller only gets us part of the way?
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay. So your argument is that the statute does not incorporate the definition from Miller?
Absolutely.
Now, it seems to me the premise we're supposed to go under is that if we can reach a reasonable construction of a statute that makes it constitutional, that's what we're supposed to do. It seems like you're asking us to go outside the statute, look for some legislative history, to find a perhaps reasonable construction that renders it unconstitutional.
Actually,
so how can we do that?
Well, it's not that contention is not absolute. When you find that there's other indications against that contention that you should render the statute constitutional, you should look to those things, Your Honor. For instance, Judge Lake did exactly what the Supreme Court did in United States versus Stevens. It looked to the legislative history to find out the purpose of the act. This is the same thing that the judge did in this case.
Well, in Stevens, they did that to assess overbreadth, but that's the argument you're not making. The Supreme Court and our court repeatedly have inferred that the Miller terms all exist when the term obscenity is all that was used, right? Ashcroft, in Hamling, the court again and again says, if we see obscenity, we're going to assume that embraces all three of the Miller elements.
Well, one of the things, we didn't raise overbreath directly. What we said was that this statute reached too much permissible speech. We did say that in our briefs. So if it reaches too much permissible speech, then it's overbroad.
Give us an example of too much permissible speech.
Sure, Your Honor. The fact that Section 48 does not define animal cruelty, and it says that any serious bodily injury is prescribed under this act, we commit serious bodily injury to animals all day, every day when we test.
Don't add obscenity, it's an and.
I understand that, but if there was a film of any cosmetic testing on an animal, any skinning an animal for its hide, and there was some form of obscenity on that film, then that would fall under Section 48's prescription.
How does that come up? I mean, I understand like we're teaching furriers how to make fur, so we teach them how to skin an animal. How's there going to suddenly be some random obscenity in the middle of this teaching video?
Under Section 48, because they make no causal connection with the obscenity and the actual act of causing harm to the animal, this is what the act defines.
Are we just like
defines.
Making up some completely unlikely hypothetical to invalidate a statute? Because I don't think that's what we're supposed to do. I mean, in Stevens, they were saying there's a lot of sort of normal things that can happen that would be rendered unconstitutional. They weren't saying, well, could you hypothetically on a law school hypo exam come up with a way in which some random obscenity shows up in a furrier class video? is that really what we're supposed to be engaged in determining facial unconstitutionality?
I don't think so, but the Stevens case also said that you can't shoehorn violence against animals into obscenity. So they squarely addressed this issue.
But that's it is like the true threat set of cases. In other words, if the government charges someone as having committed a threat, but it turns out it's hyperbole, the jury's going to be instructed, don't find them guilty. So here the jury's going to be instructed on each of the Miller elements. And you can hypothesize that there'll be cases that don't appeal to the prurient interest or aren't sexual. But in this particular case, the video may be exactly the fetish type thing that Congress intended to punish. It's graphic, it's horrible to describe, but it is a lady putting a knife in and out of a cat saying, "You like that, that's how you F a pussy." How is that not sexual and obscene?
Actually, I've seen the videos as well, Your Honor. I believe during that particular video, she said, "That's how you F
a pussy
up," okay. Which means it's actually a pun. It's not literal that she's saying that this is how you F a pussy up.
Now that sounds like a jury question, right? What does she mean by "how do you F up a pussy"? I mean, that doesn't strike me as a facial invalidity analysis at all.
Well,
that seems very much like, you know, construing what she meant. And is that obscene, and does it appeal, and is it sexual? All of that seems very much like, if we were to reverse and send back, what you would be debating both with the judge on a Rule 29 and then ultimately before the jury.
I think ultimately what's before the court is not necessarily the videos or what the conduct in those particular videos. The issue before this court is whether Section 48 actually defines obscenity as per Miller, and it just simply does not.
But what about the case law that says, the Supreme Court and our case law that say, when they use the term obscenity, courts will assume that. They imply it.
Except when otherwise indicated.
But
yes.
Then you say we have got to go to the legislative history. But the legislative history here is full of counterarguments. Senator Leahy spoke about Miller. The House report talks about Miller. They've got this partner from Latham Watkins coming in. Of course it would imply all three Miller elements. So it can be read differently.
I believe Attorney Scott Bellinger, who had a great deal of testimony during the legislative history, he says, and I quote from him, "Just throw the word obscenity in there. Case closed. We'll be done." That's not true, because he also said in that same on the same page, he says, "Then there's a hard question about whether obscenity laws might be extended to encompass something that's patently offensive, has no value, and appeals to base instincts, but is basically not obviously sexual in nature." They knew this. Animal Crush videos were not sexual in nature. They intended to extend it to animals, violence against animals.
With the idea that we're to take a statute that on its face says obscene, that has a well-established definition, and look around for random comments by senators and congressmen and people testifying before them and writing reports and law clerks or whatever to say, "Oh, they meant something else." I mean, that seems the opposite of what we're supposed to do on a constitutional examination.
I think my time has run up. I think because of also the legislative history of the original enactment in 1999, if Congress did not believe that Animal Crush videos were obscene then, I don't see how it could have metamorphosized in 2010 into something.
Well, I mean, a lot of different
people. They just left the word.
Well, we have a lot of different people in Congress anyway. It's not a static body. But anyway, we'll hear from your
All right.
colleague.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, so you get the baton on if we were to import the Miller definition to the word obscene. So we're done with Miller. Why isn't that good enough when we can all go home?
Because, independently, the statute, Section 48, is an unconstitutional form of content discrimination. RAV makes that clear. It makes clear that the greater power to prescribe a content category, here obscenity, does not include the lesser power to further prohibit certain types of content. And here, of course, that is the certain types of causation of serious bodily injury and other conduct to animals. So RAV and then the follow-up case in Virginia v. Black make clear when this type of further content-based discrimination is permissible. And they describe two broad categories, neither of which applies here. The easier one is when it's really more of a form of time, place, and manner control. And that's clearly not what's going on here. The other one is when what makes
That's the topless bar line cases, the time, place, and manner.
Yes, or, right, or there's a Kuchar case from the Seventh Circuit where certain vendors were allowed to produce obscenity and certain ones weren't, and that was affirmed as a content-neutral statute. Okay. That case is not cited in my brief. It is cited in RAV, though. Then the other line is when what makes that the further content prescribable is the same thing that makes the larger content prescribable. And so that's the example, like in Black, the cross-burning is a particularly virulent form of fighting words, causes particular harms to persons. So that can be singled out.
In RAV, when they talk about that exception, they discuss obscenity as precisely that, that could be a particularly virulent, prurient type of obscenity.
Right. And so, but that's not how this statute is set up. The way this statute, and so you could imagine this would be a tougher case if what they did was further prohibit just those obscenities, you know, subject to a higher punishment is here, just those obscenities that show
bestiality.
Right, and I think because that would be that sexual conduct. But that's not how the statute is structured. There's no requirement in the statute that the harm to the animal be related to the obscenity. So what makes a depiction of obscenity is when it's something it's judged on the whole thing, right? So if you have a 10-minute piece that the predominant theme is obscene and is found obscene, if there is some act in there of cause to an animal that doesn't fall within one of the favored exceptions in the statute, it's going to subject someone to the higher punishment of Section 48.
I think you've got it backwards. The obscenity limits, narrows the statute about animal cruelty. And because you have the whole class of animal cruelty, but obscenity is a subclass within animal cruelty, and that's the controlling and the narrowing and what takes it out of this overbroadness that legitimately...
Well, again, this isn't an argument on overbreadth. This is an argument about content discrimination within a prescribable category. So, again, there clearly is no constitutional challenge to broad prohibitions on the transport of obscenity. That's clearly permissible. I do take issue that this is limited to animal cruelty because the way that many state laws define animal cruelty, that's not the way this law is set up. Right, but again, that is a side point. But I think the greater point, though, Your Honor, is that Congress has gone through and picked out certain forms of obscenity to subject someone to a higher punishment, and they're doing that not based on the exceptional purience of the character of the depictions. They're doing
but
it based
isn't
on.
Isn't that exactly what they're doing? They're saying this is such a bizarre, out of the realm, so malum in se to get sexually excited off of this kind of thing, that it is well outside the range of anything, and we can therefore prohibit it.
No,
with RAV.
And that's not how the statute is written, though. If they require that and again, this would be a tougher case, if the obscenity were required to be linked to the conduct towards the animals, but there is no such linkage.
I'm wondering, is this, and I understand you deal in hypothets in this, but is this common that we just have sort of two people having obscene sex and then just randomly in the middle of this video somebody shoots an animal or suffocates an animal, and so now all of a sudden that's what we're talking about? And is that really what's happening, or are we just making that up?
It may not be common, but I don't think it's any more less likely than the hypotheticals discussed in RAV. In RAV, in footnote 4, the majority responds to just that criticism from the concurring justices that there really would be no legitimate political obscenity because the nature of something wouldn't be obscene if it includes legitimate political discourse. And the response from the majority is, well, no, it's easy to imagine that. Imagine some obscene video that has a model with an anti-government tattoo. And so that would fall afoul of a prohibition of just against political obscenity, and that would make it unconstitutionally
discriminatory. That's clear viewpoint discrimination. And that's what, to the extent that I understand, a fractured court in RAV, and what I think they're concerned about is if you start with clear viewpoint discrimination, there's a message that government's suppressing, but then it's making it under-inclusive. And so there are a lot of exceptions. So hunters can kill the animals, but this group of people can't. Then you have an RAV problem. Well, first, it's hard to define any content or message that Richards and Justice are trying to communicate. So at the first threshold of the RAV analysis, are they discriminating among viewpoints? It's very hard for me to see the viewpoint. You may be able to articulate one. But even if you get that, I think then the proposition of the way you're saying RAV works is that it's an odd mechanism. Provided Congress bans things entirely, the broadest category, all obscenity, like Ferber, all child pornography, then you can do it. But Congress can't step in and ban truly extreme versions of it, like this particular torture and maiming of little animals. Is that the mechanism you're saying RAV holds us to?
No, I concede that RAV allows Congress to go and target particularly purient conduct. But I don't think this is what that statute does. And if you look particularly at the statute, well, one, I think that portion of RAV I'm citing had five. It was not a unanimous decision, but it had five justices,
yes.
So that's a majority. That said, RAV shows that, well, let's consider, and again, I don't dispute that.
What's the message that's being communicated? What is the content, the expressive value of Richards and Justice's filming?
And I'm not arguing that there was one here, but this is a facial challenge to the statute, same as in
we'll
RAV.
Come up with one not
sure.
Specific to these facts. What
imagine
is the,
a cele- I'm sorry. Imagine in, a celebrity. Obscenity is a way to gain attention, gain eyeballs. Imagine a celebrity who wishes to gain attention to the plight of laboratory animals and cosmetics being applied to their eyes that cause pain and blindness. That would qualify as the causation of serious bodily injury.
You mean in putting, imagine a celebrity who's actually inserting little...
Or just having this done in the background. So the celebrity draws attention to this by having some obscene video made in a lab where rabbits are having their eyeballs poked at or tested and cause pain. That would fall afoul of this statute, regardless of whether the sex included, the obscenity included the conduct towards the animals, because again, there's no requirement of a linkage. The same person...
You're overlooking the fact that at least implicit in this language is a nexus between the cruelty and the obscenity. You don't have to spell that out when you say none of this can be done if it's obscene. So there has to be your celebrity. There's no nexus. And here, it's inextricably intertwined with what she was doing.
Right, but especially, there's no requirement of that nexus in the statute.
Of course there is.
There's
how
a
can you read it without it?
It's and. So the depiction has to include both things. They can be at separate parts of the video or image or whatever. But imagine the same hypothetical I just gave you. And it's a celebrity who wants to draw attention to the hunting practices. Same facts. A deer is being shot cruelly in the background, you know, all sorts of pain.
But does this appeal to the prurient interest?
Sure. I'm assuming that what is bringing attention is some kind of obscenity.
So celebrity has So we've got in the background some, you know, laboratory experimenting on an animal, and the celebrity is engaging in an obscene act.
Right.
Okay.
And there's no nexus.
But even so, I mean, that's already prohibited by obscenity law. So I don't understand how this is further prohibiting something. I mean. So if the celebrity is simply naked but not doing anything obscene, and then in the background is this laboratory, I don't think that's going to be barred by this statute.
No, right. Yeah, I'm assuming obscenity. So
you're
so
saying drawing attention by committing some... And I mean, in this day and age, it takes a lot to be obscene. So I guess I'm...
What I'm arguing, Your Honor, is not that that cannot be prohibited, but that it can't be targeted with a higher punishment. Just because what they're protesting is the treatment of lab animals as opposed to the treatment of hunting, which is what this statute sets up.
That be an as applied?
No, Your Honor.
That doesn't seem like the mainstream of what we're dealing with here. And I don't. I appreciate that lawyers and judges are very good at hypotheticals. I just am struggling with the idea that this is. Is this happening? Are these people being prosecuted? Are we having celebrities engaged in obscene conduct to highlight, you know?
It's
the killing of animals or whatever.
Well, as you point out, I mean, it's very hard to say that any of this is happening very often. To the best of my knowledge, Section 48 was passed in late 2010. To the best of my knowledge, this is the first federal prosecution under that. So that was almost 3 years later. So this is not, and there may have been other prosecutions since then, I'm unaware of any. But this is not something for which there is much of a record of. So we don't know what's commonly happening, which further, I think where RAV finishes is important. Because the question to ask at the end is this content-based discrimination reasonably necessary to further the compelling government interest? And the answer there was no, because of the content-neutral ban, the possibility of a content-neutral ban against all fighting words. The same thing is true here. If Congress wants to outlaw any of this conduct, it is perfectly free to do so under the existing obscenity statutes. And that the government's raised the idea that this covers conduct that the existing obscenity statutes don't. I think if you look down at those examples, there's actually less light between the conduct covered by this statute and the conduct covered by the existing statutes than the government suggests. No, but
What you get back to the wording of the new statute, says depicts actual conduct, blah, 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 and is obscene. It's the conduct that has to be obscene. It's not the celebrity taking off a blouse.
And even if that is the case, Your Honor, it is unconstitutional to penalize that celebrity because the conduct is related to lab testing as opposed to hunting or trapping or some other favorable conduct.
Is obscene. Number two is obscene. It just doesn't say obscenity is present.
My time is up. Thank you, Your Honor.
All right. Mr. Pelletier, your
vote. Section 48 is constitutional under RAV. To take the celebrities.
Before you get to RAV, two quick questions that have always troubled me about this case. What if Congress put in the word story? In other words, in this section, Animal Crush video means any. Now it reads motion, picture, film, video. What if Congress now, if we were to uphold this and then they follow suit, and they put in means any story, photograph, that depicts conduct? Would Congress be able to do that? In other words, to criminalize a story describing a person doing things to an animal?
That would create a different analysis under RAV because there's more of a threat that the suppression of ideas is afoot because you're describing things potentially, not necessarily, but potentially, it's closer to RAV. But here, the depictions must include the actual abuse of a live animal, and it doesn't even, for example.
But if there were a simultaneous scribe writing down, you know, this is what I see happening, could Congress criminalize the narrative, the written narrative, instead of the film narrative?
If Congress made a law saying you cannot transcribe actual live animals being tortured and watching it and then distribute that, that would be similar to this. It wouldn't be viewpoint.
The only other hypothetical that concerns me is, you know, I keep thinking of what if instead of animals you had humans. So let's say you've got someone filming, say, Rodney King being brutally beaten up or tortured. You would think that that film would be vital in order to destroy this industry or to prove the horrible police brutality. In part, I'm guessing that she pled, Ms. Richards would have pled, because you had the video evidence to convict her. So if we make it criminal for people to give us the best evidence of their state violation, that's an odd approach.
I'm not sure I fully understand.
Well, let's say someone is filming this act that's a violation of state criminal law.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for them to then put it on the internet, that becomes a crime for them.
Oh, you're saying that it's
got to be obscene, though.
I'm sorry. Are you saying that it's because that state law aiding and abetting would cover the initial act? I'm not sure, but
saying the filming and the marketing is a crime under Section 48.
Yes.
So if this were humans instead of animals and they filmed the brutal maiming and beating of somebody, that would chill the filming endeavor.
Well, as Judge Wiener pointed out, it has to be obscene. And obscenity, you look at the material as a whole to determine.
The statute says non-human.
And it does, yes, the statute does say non-human. But if you're assuming human beings, it has to be obscene. There has to be, it lack any serious political, literary, cultural
value.
But if
the conduct itself that they're filming has sexual aspects to it and it might arouse prurient interest in the viewer, would the filmer still be brought into it but for the exception of reporting to law enforcement?
Well, no, because the filmer...
That's fine. If you say no, I'll...
Well, I don't think so, Your Honor, because I think that it wouldn't qualify as obscenity because it has some sort of societal, serious political value if you're filming something to report to law enforcement.
Okay.
So are all the Animal Crush videos going to start having the scantily clad lady abusing animals while saying something political in a sultry voice, and is that going to then somehow make that okay?
No, because it has to be taken as a whole, whether there's serious political, literary, or whatever value. And so that's a jury question. The fact that someone mentions a congressional race in a Animal Crush video isn't going to mean that taken as a whole, it has some sort of political value.
That's going to be a jury question.
That's a jury question.
Time.
Absolutely.
Whether this is really a political speech or this is really appealing to Korean interests.
Yes, and the jury question is whether a reasonable person would determine that this has any kind of societal value. And then obviously there's appellate review, and then there's pretty high appellate review in the First Amendment obscenity area where the court kind of takes a fresh look at this. But to get back to the just to touch a little bit on the celebrity hypothetical, there are any number of reasons why that doesn't save the statute. First of all, a celebrity making a political statement and trying to draw attention to it using some sort of, you know, noteworthy obscenity might very well fall under be saved by the third prong of the obscenity standard because it has political content. It's intended to convey a political speech. It's also is defective because it's a highly speculative hypothetical, and the Supreme Court's made clear in Washington, LaGrange, and other cases, if I may just finish,
sure.
Thank you, that the courts can't consider extremely speculative hypotheticals in determining the facial validity of a statute under the First Amendment. Thank you, Your Honor.
A bunch of law professors out of business. All right, thank you, counsel, very much, and. Ms. Rayner, we noticed that you were court appointed, and we appreciate you accepting the appointment. And all three of you, we very much appreciate the excellent arguments and excellent briefing. Thank you, and y'all are excused.